Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Hello and welcome to the latest Forza Italian Football Podcast. As ever, I'm your host, Connor Clancy, just in the door from Parma Torino, and I'm joined by my two best friends once again. Kev Pogrzelski is my old friend, or Kev Pogrzelski, should I say. Is that better?
Pogrzelski is the correct pronunciation, I believe, yeah.
I'm going to try. It's difficult, but I'll try my very best. How are you keeping, mate?
I'm good, thanks.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. Clean shaven, haircut.
Where?
Weekend, everything's been shaved.
Okay, right. That you didn't need to say that. You didn't need to say that again. We heard it once. You didn't need to tell the listeners. We're also joined by Vito Doria, who is finally in Italy. Hello, Vito.
Hi, Connor. Yes, today I am in Milano. Well, actually, now it's very early morning. But I did get here in the evening, and I was in Genoa for 2 days. I obviously attended the Sampdoria Inter game, but today was a very busy day for me because I actually was being filmed by the Sampdoria social media team.
I didn't know this. Fill us in.
Okay, so the social media manager was aware of my tweets, and I had also taken some photos, so he organized an interview with me to talk about me being a Sampdoria supporter, going to the game and coming all the way from Australia just to see the team. So the video should be out sometime soon on Sampdoria's social media accounts.
Oh, that's really nice. I didn't know that was happening.
And he even asked me about my football writing podcasting. So I even gave all the guys here at Forza Italian Football a shout out to.
Top man, Vito. I'm actually going to see you tomorrow, which I'm very excited about. We're going to have lunch together in Milan.
Yeah, with Vieri and Dov. So nice get together, and then we'll catch up again in Parma.
Yeah, absolutely. After what, nearly 7 years of working together, we're finally going to meet, which is quite nice. It's going to be a good time.
Definitely.
All right. Anyway, guys, let's get on with the action. Let's start with where I've just come from, which was a mad game at the Stadio Tardini. Parma 3, Torino 2. Bobby English, Roberto Inglese, he was dropped, but he came on and scored the winner in the 88th minute. Kev, what a game.
Yeah, I was relatively busy tonight, but I kind of had one eye on the game. I kept sort of turning around. I turned it on quite late. I saw the first goal go in really, really quickly. And then it kind of had everything. It had red cards. It had penalty. Can we call them controversies, and almost injury time winners.
It had a first minute goal, a last minute goal, two red cards, two VAR penalties. One of them was missed, and the leadership changed three times. So what more could you ask for?
Absolutely. Not what you usually get from Monday night games anywhere in the world.
No, but I was going to say not what you usually get at the Tardini, but this season, as you guys have seen, it's been quite dramatic down here, whether it's Atalanta or Parma playing at home. So it's been quite good this year. Vito, it was the young lad did it again. Dejan Kulusevski. Oh, he's unbelievable.
Last season, I thought when he made a few cameo appearances at Atalanta, I thought, what's the fuss about this kid? He looked raw and very inexperienced, needless to say. Now that he is at Parma, getting that playing time and spending time on loan at the Ducali, he has become an important player for them already. And in this game in particular, he was highly influential. In particular, look, he did score the opening goal, but I thought his assist for Andreas Cornelius's equaliser, I thought that was superb. Just the run on his part and then just that defence-splitting pass, that was rather exquisite from the young lad.
Yeah, it really was. You could see that the pass was the only real option he had, but it always looked quite difficult to execute, and it was perfect. I was speaking to Juraj Kuchka in the week about Kulusevski, and he was kind of blown away by how good he is, and he made the point of saying how young he is too. He's still 19, and I saw a tweet from Opta Paolo tonight that said he's the youngest player in the top five divisions to be directly involved in at least four goals this season. He's obviously got three assists and now his goal. Well, actually, that would be four assists. I think that might have been after he scored, but you take the point. He's impressing, and he's still 19, and he's got a long way to go. I do agree with what you said about last season. Whenever he came on for Atalanta, I wasn't really too impressed, but then I saw him in the Primavera final down here at the Tardini against Inter, and he was a cut above everybody else on the pitch. And then when he got loaned to Parma, I was a little bit excited, although I was hopeful that he'd stay at Atalanta, because I did write after that game that I thought he'd have a part to play, but wasn't to be. He's making a name for himself now, though, and you wouldn't be too surprised to see him go back to Atalanta next summer and earn his place under Gasperini. Roberto Inglese, Kev, he got his goal. He came on late, and it didn't take him long to score. It's kind of exactly what he needed. And I think with Andreas Cornelius also scoring his first tonight, which was a good finish as well, this is exactly what Parma were looking for. They've needed someone to score. Now, both of their strikers have scored in the same game, and they usually only play with one, so they'll kind of push each other on now, you'd hope.
Yeah, I think that's the benefit to Parma, is that they will push each other on. There were times last year, as well as Inglese played, he was their only real option up top at times. And Cornelius obviously took his goal really, really well tonight. And I think that's probably enough to maybe keep him in the side for the next game. And we'll only push Inglese on to want to sort of get that place back. So a bit of competition never hurt anyone.
No, absolutely not. I do agree. I think Cornelius probably has done enough to keep his place in the team. He wasn't always the most involved, but his hold-up play was just better than what Inglese's has been in recent weeks. And Inglese is obviously quite a fine striker. If he gets back to form and he's got an extra motivation to get back to form, then it can only be a good thing for Parma. Vito, I want to talk about Gervinho, because I'm not a Parma fan. Okay, but I watch Parma more than most sides. Well, at least I have over the last, 13 months living here. He is the most frustrating player I've ever seen in my life. It's unbelievable. And is there any way that Roberto de Versa can drop him?
I doubt he can drop him, because a club like Parma, under the current circumstances, really depends on someone with his pace, skill, and X factor. Unfortunately for someone like Gervinho, he is 32 years old, so it's come to a point where nobody has a chance to coach the selfishness out of his play. It really depends on any turn of results. They got the win tonight, but if they went on a really bad losing streak, or that losing streak was caused because he would not provide enough assists, or his shots were too wayward, then maybe he could be dropped. But I can't really see that happening. After all, he did provide the assist for Kulusevski's goal. Whether that was the intentional or not, that's a totally different story. But I'd say it was not intentional.
It absolutely was not intentional. And he even kind of celebrated the goal himself, which this is Gervinho. But the thing, he seems to be really winding up the Parma fans at the moment, which it's strange, because he was obviously so good for them for a couple of months at the beginning of last season, and the club spoke so highly of him when he arrived, but he's really, really irritating. And they've got Jan Caramo there now as well. So you'd imagine if Gervinho's selfishness does get the better of him and he stops creating these chances, then maybe they will mix things up. Caramo and Kulusevski, either side of the striker, could be quite promising. There were two penalties. Both were given after the referee checked his pitch side monitor after being informed by the VAR man that an infringement had happened. I don't see much controversy here, Kev. I think they were both penalties.
I'll admit to you, Connor, I missed the first. I literally saw the Torino player walking off and then Sirigu saved the pen. The other one, yeah, it was a clumsy challenge. It was stupid when he wasn't the right side of the attacker to make a challenge in the air. Yeah, I'll probably agree with you on that, but you'd have to tell me what happened with the first, to be perfectly honest.
The first one, Kulusevski cut in up from the right and he took a shot with his left foot. And it was Bremer who ran out like this and put his head down and the ball hit his elbow there. For those listening, his arm was above his head. It was silly. It was a penalty.
I saw the players making that sort of body sign to the ref as to, you know, and I kind of just assumed that there'd been a free kick or something on the edge of the box and somebody in the wall has lifted their arm. But yeah, if it's hit his arm, then you're going to get penalised.
It was quite funny because after the referee went and watched the clip back, and obviously in the press area at Parma, when the TVs are working, which they were tonight, we see what the referee's watching. We could see it was quite clearly a penalty. And Armando Itzo was standing over the referee's shoulder while he watched the replay. And he came back on and Itzo was saying, no, it hit him on the shoulder. Everyone has just seen what's happened. It quite clearly didn't. And I originally thought Itzo had been sent off because I didn't see the second yellow get brandished. And Itzo was kind of losing his head. But it wasn't him. It was Bremer who got sent off, having already been booked. But I think it was a straight red he was given, which is strange. So maybe he said something in protest. Before we move on, Bruno Alves needs help because Simone Jacoponi is not a centre-back and Ricardo Gagliolo on the left is terrible. So it's basically Bruno Alves on his own at the back and it's not going too well defensively for Parma this season. He's still as good as ever. But anyway, we'll go to the top of Serie A. Inter are still there. Kev is smug, so I'll start with Vito. Vito, they've won 6 from 6.
Well, it's a sensational start from an Inter perspective, and it's that cliched Conte effect by the look of things. He's really galvanized this squad, and they were in fantastic form despite playing rather out of form opposition, but they deserve credit for the way they played their game. And although Stefano Sensi was involved in the goals and he had another fantastic game in midfield, I thought Marcelo Brozovic was also fundamental to their play. He covers a lot of ground. He wins the ball back. He's good in dead ball situations. And even if he wasn't directly involved in the goals, he was still involved in the play, you know, picking the right options and knowing who was the best teammate to play the ball to.
Yeah, outside of the Inter fan base, Brozovic does kind of slip under the radar a little bit, Kev.
Yeah, I've never really sort of taken much notice of him, and maybe that's why he's so good, because he just distributes the ball so well and just keeps the side ticking over. And he was probably the one Inter player that probably had I've not looked at the numbers, but a high success rate on his passing, because while Inter have sort of got to this 6 games on the bounce without, you know, really flying, if you like, there's still misplaced passes going on around the team. And Brozovic just keeps them going and keeps driving them forward. And it's, you know, like you said, like Vito says, Samp weren't great. They were sitting very, very deep.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Alexis Sanchez kind of benefited from Sampdoria being quite deep. He got his goal, he claims two, but it was one. Kev, were you impressed by him?
Well, he certainly looked a lot better at Inter than he did in his latter stages of his career in England when he moved to United. I thought it was a bit cheeky that he sort of claimed the first one. Although, I suppose technically, if it comes off a defender, it goes in. You know, he has to make the run for the second one. He's got to anticipate that something's... I think he probably anticipates that the goalkeeper makes a save and spills it, so he's already on his way when Sensi takes the shot. And I said a couple of weeks ago about the amount of sort of shoot-on-sight efforts Sensi takes, and probably both first inter goals came from that. And I think that alone can be maybe a little infuriating. If Inter were to be facing, say Inter are facing Juve, you know, and they've got to do better than taking just pop shots from outside the box. It'll be interesting if they ever struggle to break a side down.
So are you not convinced by them?
I'm convinced with Conte's ability to get more than the sum of his parts out of the team. I would like to see them moving the ball a little smoother. You know, there's still a few misplaced passes, players kind of running into the space that they're expected to. But I think that will come with time. We've got to remember he only came in the summer. But, you know, have they really, really been tested yet? And I just wonder, with maybe a stronger defence, not that we can necessarily call, you know, Juve flying at the moment. It's, yeah, I don't know. I still think that, you know, I've always been cheering them on, if you like. Well, let's not say cheering them on, but certainly I've been...
you think I've that been backing, good
after. I've been backing them from since the start of the season, but I still think there is another gear that they can hit if everything sort of falls into place.
You spoke about them needing to overcome a sterner defence, but does one actually exist in Serie A? They haven't got it. Napoli is strong on paper, but we've yet to really see Manolas and Koulibaly show that. Roma, Lazio, Atalanta, Milan, no. It's a strange...
Oddly, when I was watching the game at the weekend, I was thinking, you know, because obviously Conte rested Lukaku, and I was looking at it, and Lautaro and Alexis played very well together. But then also, when you look at Lukaku in the team, they play very well together. And I think for once, you know, there's been such a reliance on Icardi, and it was, you know, Inter had to play the way to get the best out of Icardi, and he was largely their only striking option. Now they've actually got the option to mix it up top, and actually not have that one way of playing, you know, rest a player. I think that's a huge benefit to them this season if one of them was to get injured. Or suspended.
That's likely. So it turns out Mauro Icardi was actually Inter's biggest problem on the pitch, as well as off it, for all these years. Who knew? That's amazing. Vito, you were there. What did you make of Inter?
Inter, look, I thought at the start of the game, it just seemed like it was another game for some, that we started off okay, and then after 10, 15 minutes, we just lost a bit of confidence after missing a few chances. And then, yeah, Inter really clicked into gear. They were able to pass the ball out from the back rather comfortably. And also just the way they would move, especially in that final attacking third, they looked very lethal and they could easily stretch the defence. So although Sampdoria have a shambolic defence, I think generally speaking, with the players they've got and the way Conte has drilled this side, I think against stronger sides, they still have that understanding and ability to, you know, stick to the 3-5-2 when necessary. But if they got to, you know, change positions, break the lines, that sort of stuff, interchange positions, they'll stretch even stronger defences this season. And I think with the individual talents that they have there now, I think... Inter, they're more than capable of scoring a few goals and earning more wins.
We're going to talk about...
Go. Yes. Okay.
As a Samp fan, were you a little disappointed with the effort put in by the home players?
By the majority of them, yes. Inter, a team, you know, that are going to work hard, move the ball quick and press intensely. One of the things that really caught my eye, because I was in the Gradinata Nord, was I could see the Inter defence and the Sampdoria attackers. I noticed that whenever Inter got a goal kick, Handanovic could play short to De Vrij or Brozovic, and they could easily pass the ball from the back without much pressure. So I was really disappointed that Rigoni or Quagliarella, I don't care that he's 36, they should try and press them, shut them down and stop them from passing the ball around. So even though we couldn't get much fluidity going midfield, at least try to pressure Inter and deny them space. We hardly saw that on Saturday evening. And if you're not going to play well or play good football, at least show some effort, show some aggression. And pressing is a fundamental part of the modern game. And we barely saw that. We only really saw it in the second half when Sanchez was sent off, Caprari came on. We moved the ball a little bit quicker, but was too little too late. And under the current circumstances, I think the confidence throughout the majority of the squad's completely shot.
I think this might be something that you just have to accept with Fabio Quagliarella, though, considering he's, what, 36, 37 in January?
Yeah.
If he's going to be closing people down, he's not going to be able to score goals because his legs will just be shot.
I understand that with Quagliarella, but on the TV, it looked as though Sampdoria were playing at a different pace to Inter, and it didn't look as though it was because Inter were pressing that much more intensely. It actually looked like Samp almost were, dare you say, like conserving energy because they'd kind of given up hope almost from quite early on. And I think it looked as though Di Francesco had gone with a 3-5-2, but they were sitting so deep in a line of five most of the game that it looked like they were playing a very deep 5-3-2, which didn't really allow for more players to be around the Inter midfield and press them. So it just looked like Di Francesco had got his tactics wrong, and the Samp players never really had that much belief in themselves to really go full throttle.
Yeah, what's next for Samp, Vito? Because Di Francesco's under a lot of pressure. There are a lot of reports now saying that the game at Verona will be his last chance before getting a sack.
Gianpaolo.
Well, that's the thing. If Italy was like England, no, you wouldn't rule out a swap between the two clubs. But unfortunately, if one club sacks a coach, he can't be hired by another in the same season. So can't see that happening. There has been a rumour that Beppe Iacchini, the journeyman coach, could be brought in for a quick fix. But I think that's a bad idea because, as far as I'm concerned, it's not overly Di Francesco's fault. At the end of the day, I still think Massimo Ferrero is the problem. And now there's more speculation that Vialli and the group that he's with, they haven't put in a proper bid for the club. So again, the whole ownership scenario is just impacting on how the future of the players is going to be. So it's really disappointing in that regard. But even with the Di Francesco, I think, you know, let's say he stays, he's got to focus more on how we are in possession, because I think defensively, those players individually are beyond help. You could get Nereo Rocco or Helenio Herrera out back from the dead, or get Giovanni Trapattoni or Fabio Capello out of retirement. You cannot teach these defenders anything. They are useless. Hopefully we sell them in January or at the end of the year. And if we're still in Serie A by 2020-21, hopefully there's more money spent on defenders, because the current bunch are just absolutely not up to standard for Serie A. And in a league which has made a reputation for strong defending, they are the complete opposite.
Yeah, it's a real worry for them, for sure. But anyway, we'll move on from that. Milan Fiorentina. Milan are funny again. You can't look at this in any other way. We'll talk about Frank Ribery in a minute because he was fantastic again. But AC Milan, Kev, they are horrendous.
Yeah, it's like they're a comedy act now. From just top to bottom, from behind the scenes, you know, the players that they have there, the fans don't want some of the players there. They turned on Suso. From what I understand on Sunday evening. And I just don't see where they go. I don't think the piece I wrote is up, but they really need to sort of bottom out and sort out what the actual problem is. They need to have a strategy and a sense of direction where they want to go. If the money's not there, they need to find the right coach and give him the time to actually develop the team. And I'm not sure if they actually have the right coach in Giampaolo.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm inclined to agree. I do really like what he did at Sampdoria, and I think it's always too harsh to write someone off after 6 games, but it just doesn't seem like this is working in any way whatsoever, because there's nothing. They haven't shown anything in any of their games this season. They've won twice, but they were, correct me if I'm wrong, against Verona and Brescia, against 2 newly promoted teams. So
correct.
They've lost 4 games this season, and it doesn't even look like there's going to be any signs of progression anytime soon. I'm a little bit annoyed that Atalanta haven't had the chance to play them yet, because you'd imagine they'll sort things out, whether they sack Giampaolo and get someone solid in soon. But they go to Genoa next, and then after that game at Genoa, they're back at the San Siro against Lecce. So they have the chance to pick up some points in the next few weeks, but would that just be kind of glossing over things, Vito?
Absolutely. I think that Giampaolo, more than anything, his man management's not really the best. And I'm not convinced about his strength of character. I think he needs to bench a few more of some of the old guard. And we're going to sound like broken records, but I think Zuzu and Çalhanoğlu, they have to be dropped. They are too creative players. They do have the ability, but whether it's the mentality or the mindset, they're not putting the effort in, and they're not influencing games. They're just so inaccurate with their passing and their shooting. And instead of being two players that have to lift for Milan and elevate the quality of the team, they're the two that bring down the Rossoneri the most. They are both liabilities to that team. And as bad as Giampaolo has been, I think Sozo and Çalhanoğlu are the main parts of the on-field problems.
Well, it was Çalhanoğlu who gave the ball away for the Fiorentina penalty that opened the scoring, right? And I saw a tweet from someone moments after saying that Çalhanoğlu has been the best Milan player on the pitch. I'm thinking, are we watching the same game? Because I haven't seen Çalhanoğlu play well in a long time. I think he's been kind of getting away with it for quite a while at Milan, and he had excuses made for him because he wasn't playing in his favourite position, but he's just not been good enough. Nobody at Milan has been good enough, but I'm sick of it. But let's not do this week, shall we? Frank Ribery, Kev, he's phenomenal.
Yeah, I must admit, like some other people that I've spoken to, I don't think I was expecting him to have the impact that he looks like he's going to have at Fiorentina, because let's face it, at Bayern Munich, he struggled with keeping himself fit. He became a bit part player towards the last couple of years there. And you almost thought that Fiorentina might have been getting, well, not that they got sold, but they might be picking up a sort of somebody that was going to end up being a dead weight for them to carry throughout the season. People just watching him sort of spend time on the sidelines, not able to get fit and contribute. But, you know, that that goal of his really sort of showed everything that he was about in his pomp, really.
Yeah, even the goal he got against Atalanta, that was so nicely taken as well. He's a really, really good player. And he is adding a lot. The combination play that him and Federico Chiesa show sometimes is a joy to watch as well. They kind of seem to be on the same wavelength, which not many at Fiorentina were in the last season with Chiesa. But Fiorentina could be okay. What are we predicting from them? Challenging for Europe?
Wasn't Vieri at the start of the season thinking about Europe? I thought they might still struggle, but if they can really sort of get their run together going now, I think they'd be okay. They can maybe push for Europa League, but not much more.
Juve beat Spal 2-0. Convincing, but not convincing, I think it's fair to say. Ettrick Berisha was excellent in goal for Spal, so this could have been a lot worse for the Biancazzurri. But Vito, is this the most Maurizio Sarri-like performance we've seen from Juve?
Look, at the moment, you can probably say yes, because he's starting to use Aaron Ramsey now, and looks like he's starting to settle in a fair bit. And then you had Ronaldo and Dybala, and probably having them in the team probably will make the play more fluid than having Higuain, which probably sounds a bit strange considering how many goals Higuain scored under Sarri at Napoli. Now, at the moment, look, I suppose with the 2-0 scoreline, it doesn't look overly impressive, but I think due to Berisha's heroics, the defeat probably could have looked a lot more embarrassing for Spal if it wasn't for him. And it's not the first time, too, because Berisha has been excellent in quite a few games for the Spallini.
Yeah, well, against Atalanta, he was the reason that they ever had the chance to go 2-0 ahead. He was amazing against Atalanta. But anyway, I don't really want to talk about Juve this week, unless you guys want to say any more. Kev?
No, not really. It always follows the same sort of storyline. You sort of watch the game, not hoping, but it has a bit of interest while they've not broken the deadlock. And as soon as they've broken the deadlock, you kind of just take your eyes away from it because you're adamant that they're then going to go and pick up 3 points.
Yeah, that's how it works, isn't it? And note to Miralem Pjanic, another great goal after his fine strike against Brescia as well. But who are third? Atalanta, they beat Sassuolo 4-0. But really, they won 4-0 in 35 minutes and then decided to stop playing because they've got the Champions League. What a performance that was, particularly from Papu Gomez. Kev, wow. Have you got 5 adjectives to describe his first goal?
Oh, wait there. No, I was supposed to.
You were supposed to. Vito, have you got your 5 adjectives?
I did come up with them, but now I have to refresh my memory. So
you guys are terrible.
Said, wonderful, direct.
Rapid, incisive, direct, delightful, and damaging.
Kev?
Let's just talk about how good he was on the day, shall we?
Was otherworldly. It was phenomenal. And he did the same thing he did against Parma last season, which was not really play in his usual position. It was quite noticeable early on, even before he scored, which was after only, 6 minutes or something, that he wasn't playing as a 10. He was playing almost at the base of the midfield, like splitting... who was it that played? It was Freuler and Pasalic as the two. And it was strange, but Sassuolo didn't know what to do. You could see the players kind of pointing at him. No one wanted to take responsibility for him, and no one knew whose responsibility he was. And then when he got that ball, what was he, about 40 yards from goal? And he just drove at Sassuolo. He skipped past one of them, knocked it through another's legs, and then lifted it over Andrea Consigli. It was clear that it was going to be his day, and he was just playing games.
So you were at the game, Connor, and would you say that was Gasperini's decision or Gomez's? Because it was quite early that he was playing so deep. But there was I couldn't work out from watching on the TV whether he had seen something, because I think he's got that ability to read the game that he sort of sat back and took that deeper role, or whether it was so early in the game that it was actually a ploy by Gasperini to sort of have him do that dictation from further back.
Well, like I said, it's not the first time we've seen it. So I think he and Gasperini do kind of have an understanding that he doesn't really have to stick to his position, especially when he's the 10 behind Iličić and Zapata up front. He's kind of got more free rein to wander and float around in search of that space, because once he has space and the ball, he can do anything from anywhere. So I do think it's something that they've both come to together, because, yeah, he doesn't always play in his position, which is strange, because even if you go back to the first season they qualified for Europe, he was very much a left winger, and his thing was he'd cut in and shoot, or cut in and cross, or win penalties. Last season it changed a little bit. He went more central. This season he's very, very central, and he very rarely wanders out onto the wings. But yeah, I think it's probably something they've worked on together. They both seem quite happy with it. And it's not like when he was doing it, Gasperini was shouting at him, asking him what he was doing. So I don't think he was going against orders or anything like that. But it was 4-0 after 35 minutes. It was mad, but it's not mad because it's Atalanta and they do crazy things, Vito.
Yes, and also, it's not the first time that Atalanta has really smashed Sassuolo, because the same fixture last season was a 6-2 victory to Atalanta. So, especially while Roberto De Zerbi is the coach of Sassuolo, Sassuolo are a team that are going to score a lot of goals, or they're going to concede a lot. And then, of course, facing Atalanta, who score a lot, I think, you know, anyone who had put money for a 0-0 draw would have lost a lot of money, because Atalanta, they know how to put on a show, and Sassuolo, they can put on a show themselves, or they'll let you put on a show. And they let Atalanta weave their magic, especially Papu.
Yeah, I was going to this thinking that I might be in for a 5-4 or something, because like you say, both teams score and both teams can concede. But after about 5 minutes, I just knew, okay, this is only going one way. And then when Gomez did that, I was thinking, okay, right, Atalanta will be okay today because he's on it. And when he's on it, they win. It's usually that simple. Duvan Zapata probably could have scored 4. He got 1. Yeah, the second half, they just stopped. And Kev, I suppose you can't really blame them, given that they play Shakhtar on Tuesday evening at San Siro.
No, it was like a few teams with Champions League or even European commitments that I've seen this year, that if you get a lead that quickly, you know, out of attempting to sort of blow a side away or just out of pure luck, there is no real need, is there, to put any additional effort in when you've got a big game coming up.
Yeah, I had an argument with someone in the press box about this at halftime. Someone came up to me and he just kept saying, Otto, Otto. I was like, no. He said, yeah, here, 8. And then he asked, how many do you think? And I said, well, 5 maximum. And then he was cursing at me in Italian for predicting such a stupid score.
And that was probably based on Sassuolo's defending, though, to be fair.
Yeah, but then I said, well, they're playing in the Champions League on Tuesday and they've lost their first game, so they kind of need to conserve their energy for that. And he was having none of it. But
I'm surprised by that, because usually Italians, they're the other way around. They would have your way of thinking. And it would be weird for Italian people to go, you know, let's see an 8-0. But me personally, as much as I would have liked to have seen an 8-0, for the circumstances you mentioned, it's not really necessary. Maybe if Atalanta did not have those European commitments, or it was like a week off, or even the international break coming up, then maybe Gasperini would say, hey, keep going, let's get 8. But I think, you know, after the Dinamo Zagreb defeat, I think La Dea have to find a way to atone, and being the first home in inverted commas fixture against Shakhtar Donetsk, I think Atalanta got to focus on bringing some pride back in Europe and showing the continent that they can bring that spectacular football to the Champions League and not just produce that stuff in Serie A fixtures.
For sure. There was quite a funny moment, actually. A funny five moments with hindsight. But if ever there was something that summed up how chaotic this Atalanta team can be. 4-0 up and cruising in Reggio Emilia against Sassuolo. And when they conceded, they genuinely panicked. For 5 minutes, they were terrified. Gasparini was going crazy. The fans went silent. The players were losing their heads. It was very, very funny. And I even messaged Dov to say, Sassuolo are going to come back here because Atalanta just lost it. But it wasn't to be. They held on. Well, they held on. They comfortably saw it out, to be fair. But another team who scored 4 goals this weekend are Lazio. Vito, they looked pretty ruthless. And Ciro's back.
Yes, he's back on the pitch. He contributed. He set up the Milinkovic-Savic goal, if I'm not mistaken, and he got the 4th goal. So that was a very well-taken strike. And, yeah, he even hugged Simone Inzaghi after he scored. So that was really good. Otherwise, in general, Lazio were the more clinical of the two. Genoa had some chances, but Strakosha made a couple of good saves. But it's important to see Immobile, Milinkovic-Savic scoring. Then Caicedo, he scored a nice goal from a tight angle. So when you got him contributing, that's something. And then Stefan Radu, out of all people. I was looking at Twitter and Alistair McKenzie, who was at the game for FIF, he was rather shocked because Radu doesn't score many goals in general, but the goal he scored was a well-struck ball, was a well-struck shot and pretty nice finish.
Yeah, it was. Kev, were you impressed?
Well, by Radu's strike?
By the lot.
Yeah, I think we've talked up Lazio for Champions League challenges this year. And it was, you know, from the highlights I saw, it was very much they were clinical in front of goal. Strakosha, like Vito says, made some decent saves at decent times when it was sort of only 1-0 or 2-0, and then Genoa could have maybe launched a fight back, but they just haven't got enough up top, Genoa. And Lazio, if they can keep this tight at the back, then I think they'll probably be in the mix with probably another 5 or 6 teams for Champions League.
Yeah, Champions League. I think it's probably what they should be aiming for, to be fair. Napoli 2, Brescia 1. Mario Balotelli. This was beautiful. His daughter obviously lives in Naples, and he carried her out before the game, and she was wearing a Napoli kit. Napoli 1-2-1, and Balotelli scored. So his daughter's probably happy, Kev.
Yeah, I imagine so. I hope she was quite happy with the entertainment on show at the San Paolo, because it was quite a good game. I think I tweeted mid-game that there were so many goals that were being disallowed by VAR and everything else that I was forgetting which ones had counted and which ones hadn't. You had the Manolas handball, and then he got his own goal. You had the wonderful strike by Tonelli that, yeah, it was a real shame that got ruled out for a foul in the build-up, because that actually would have probably put the frighteners up Napoli for a bit, because they weren't really that convincing when they were trying to find a way past Brescia.
They do this sometimes, though, right? They don't always convince, but they still find a way more often than not.
Yeah, and I think you were mentioning it the other day about the unseasonable warmth in Italy, because they stopped again for a water break midway through the game. And a lot of the players on both sides looked kind of physically, not struggling, but sort of drained by whatever temperature it was in Naples that day.
Well, I'm considerably northern in Parma, and today is the last day of September and it was 28 degrees. That's mad. It's absolutely mad. So I can imagine that it was a bit hotter than in Napoli. But yeah.
Both sets of players had to cope with that, though, and Napoli still did struggle at times to break Brescia down until that sort of classic Napoli move. Ball out into the right-hand side with Callejon coming in, and he either sort of whizzed it across the box. This time he cut it back for Mertens to just smash past the goalkeeper. Mm. Classic Napoli.
Classic Napoli. Elsewhere, Roma got a win down way, way, way south at Lecce. But Lecce were okay, Vito, and the promoted sides continue to do all right.
Yeah, well, Lecce, they didn't necessarily get blown away by Roma. And, yeah, they actually do show some rather good comfort on the ball. One particular player that was impressive was Balco. He's a rather nippy type of player, quick with the ball at his feet, and can pick a pass. So I think, yeah, along with Mancoso, he's probably one player that really makes them tick.
Well, if it wasn't for man of the match, Chris Smalling, Kev, maybe Lecce would have got something, but he was quite good.
Yeah, well, I watched the game and I thought, wow, Roma are actually having to contain Lecce here. I'm not sure if I quite had Smalling down for man of the match. It's just that it got fairly widely reported on a few podcasts and things I listened to here in the UK. Yeah, I don't know. English players generally don't travel very well, so I'm quite surprised to see Smalling getting some good press in Roma. I actually have to pay more attention to his performance rather than them struggling to break down the opposition, maybe.
Yeah, you would hope that he does quite well, because you're right in saying that English players usually don't travel. I'm sorry, Vito, you look like a deer who's just been caught in the headlights. I don't know what happened, but just the way you turned to the camera there really threw me off. Are you okay?
I'm fine. Unfortunately, I forgot to mute my mic, and that was because I was looking at my copy of La Gazzetta, which I bought today, as well as Corriere dello Sport. And yes, La Gazzetta gave Dzeko the 7, who scored the winning goal, but Smalling also got a 7 out of 10. 10 recuperated balls, and he was described as robust.
Seven's quite good from Gazzetta as well, to be fair.
Definitely.
The ratings out here aren't the most generous.
Seven's quite good for Smalling.
Yeah. Kev, you okay?
Yeah, I was just saying 7's quite good for Smalling. I've really never rated the young man, but
he was good for a year at Fulham, and then not really.
Yeah. Happened.
Udinese beat Bologna 1-0.
I mean, Santander played.
There you go. There's the reason. Do we have to talk about this? Probably not.
Other than that, I'm actually happy for Stefano Okaka. I've always liked him since he joined Samp. But he's the only... He's got his own strengths and weaknesses. But yeah, well, he plays for Udinese, so that's the major downside.
His only strength is his strength. He's strong, and that is it. But he's another Santander. Can't stand that.
Yeah, he's better than Santander. Come on.
I just really feel for Bologna. I don't know, you know, I spent a few days there last year, really fell in love with the city. They were playing some wonderful stuff under Mihailovic last year. I bigged them up at a couple of weeks ago about how well they could do. And I hope they're not just going to do their usual and have a really sort of topsy-turvy season. And I'd like to see a little bit more from them.
It's a real concern, though, isn't it? Because it's not an ideal situation for them, obviously, given Mihailovic's health issues, but it's not going to be easy for them to do very well, considering they don't have their coach with them for most of the time.
No, I reckon it might be affecting them, and it might have some long-term effects, or at least some effects throughout the remainder of this season. Hopefully they can turn it around, because when they have been informed, they've played some excellent football. And although the strikers left a lot to be desired, they do have a pretty good midfield there and some rather exciting wingers on their day. So hopefully they can bring some spark sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and as Kev alluded to, the city's fantastic. The fans are great. Stadium's beautiful. So it would be nice to see Bologna do something good this year. Lastly, Cagliari and LS Verona drew 1 each. But it's Cagliari and LS Verona, aren't it? They're not going to concern anyone, so let's not talk about it. That'll do, I think, guys. I need to be up very, very early tomorrow morning, and I'm still a long way away from getting to sleep tonight, and it's gone. It's, 1 o'clock? So, we wrap it up.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, that works for
You're
me.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm calling. It's done. Yeah. So, Vito, I will see you in about 12 hours in Milan for some lunch.
Yeah, sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Are you going to the Atalanta game tomorrow evening?
I am planning to. Only thing is I have to purchase my ticket, but I read that the ticket box, the ticket office around the San Siro is going to be open for about 3 hours before kickoff. So, yeah, I should be able to get a ticket.
There should be tickets available, right, Kai?
There absolutely will be tickets available, yeah. It's San Siro. I mean, Atalanta's home ground holds 25,000 people. The city only has 200,000. San Siro holds nearly half of the population of the city.
There was some confusion on British TV here this weekend that one commentator said they'd be playing Shakhtar at the Tardini. Then you confused me by saying that you'd be at Atalanta Shakhtar. So I thought maybe they are playing at the Tardini. And then another commentator said a stadium in Bergamo would be ready. And I thought, because they specifically said that the stadium had been readied for the Champions League to meet UEFA standards. And I thought to myself, no, I'm pretty sure I read that it will be San Siro and they're closing the two ends behind the goals and it's just the sides or...
I didn't know that. That would be odd.
That's what... I'm sure I read that somewhere rather than heard that.
I can't imagine that being the case because the officials will want to go in. I don't know. That would be bizarre.
The capacity is reduced for it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So the top tier will be shut, you would imagine, because at both ends now, the middle of both ends are now not allowed to have people in them because of structural issues with the San Siro. So it makes sense to shut off the top tier, which we've seen Milan and Inter do for home games before as well in the last few years. But no, the original idea about the stadium, I think it's being renovated so that they can play European home games there in the future. But during the summer, there were talks that they were going to try and get the home games played there this year. But then they weren't on track to get it finished in time. They were going to just keep the bad end shut. But no, they're at San Siro for the Champions League. And I'm not sure, probably the Europa League as well, if they end up in that after the group stages. But we'll think about that when it comes to it. But yeah, let's hope they can get a result tomorrow night.
Yes. Enjoy, guys.
I can promise you I won't enjoy it. I hate working at Atalanta games, but we'll see. We'll see. Well, I'm happy to be there. My first ever Champions League game, so I'm quite excited. But anyway, right, head over to ForzaItalianFootball.com, everybody. Read all of the stuff we write. We are doing a lot this season, especially around the weekends. Every match has a feature written about it, as well as the match report and the other bits. So get over to the website and read all the stuff. Kev has something about Liverpool. Yeah. And AC Milan. There's a connection. Going up. I'll say tomorrow. I'll do that on the train. That'll be up tomorrow. Kev, do you want to brief people on that?
Well, you might need to change the intro as I wrote it after Torino. But it's just how much Milan are starting to mirror the collapse, if we can call it a collapse, of Liverpool in the early 90s, you know, and making similar mistakes regarding coaching appointments, playing staff, not getting the ground better and being able to commercialise some of the revenue or increase their revenue. So, yeah, that's roughly what it's about.
Perfect. I'll be writing about Parma and probably singing the praises of Dejan Kulusevski again. So head over to the website for that and many, 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 many more things. So that's everything. Bye.
Ciao, ciao. Ciao. Sognare questa
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.